You were my first.
Oh my god, amazing.
I'm blushing.
I wish I remembered it. Totally
so it was a big deal for me. It was probably just another day for you.
Welcome to Sweet Release. Hi, sweets. Welcome back. Today, I am so excited. I have an ENM connoisseur, coach, guide, and for those of you that are unfamiliar with the acronym, Ethical Non-Monogamy, which some people also call it CNM, Consensual Non-Monogamy, but she is here to talk all about it. And I'm so excited to have you here, Allie.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming. So I would love for you to just kind of start talking about, for those people, I know a lot of my listeners are familiar with ENM, but maybe for those that aren't, kind of give a background about what it means, the difference between like the traditional monogamous relationships, maybe like kind of some history or all of that. I know you.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of history. Non-monogamy, actually, I love to point out, you know, the use of the word traditional relationships, you know, traditional monogamy. Non-monogamy has actually been around a lot longer than monogamy. Mm-hmm. So that's actually the traditional relationship structure.
So true. Yes. Yeah.
But just for those who aren't familiar, so non-monogamy is an umbrella term that encompasses a lot of different relationship frameworks, from polyamory to open relationships to relationship anarchy. This all falls under the non-monogamy umbrella. Excuse me. And the main difference, of course, between monogamy and non-monogamy is that you are having multiple concurrent relationships with different people simultaneously with the consent of everyone involved. And that's the key difference, because a lot of people, of course, go, oh, isn't that just cheating? Consent is the key here. Everyone is on board. Everyone's aware of what's going on, and everyone's into it in whatever dynamic you've agreed upon.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah. and kind of the history, like why were we all non-monogamous in the beginning? Like,
well, you can look at, there's, you know, different civilizations all over the world. This is, you know, dating back to BCE time, you know, Mesopotamia. Mm-hmm. We were seeing much more communal societies, multiple relationships. And I mean, even now, I was actually just on Easter Island, which is actually known locally as Rapa Nui, and they still have a communal society. So what that means is, when someone has, you know, a baby with a partner, that child is actually the responsibility of the entire community. There are shared responsibilities. It's not just up to the two people that parented that child, or excuse me, who created that child. Yeah, it's really a group effort in a lot of ways. And look, and there's pros and cons, right, to all of the above. There are amazing ways that you can share parenting responsibilities and rearing children with community. But of course, that comes with other elements of making sure that everyone's on the same page about how to do so and all of that. And we can deep dive into all these juicy details as well.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that it's become such this well-known phenomenon in the last few years. Or maybe not. I mean, what was your journey like, and how long ago did it start for you?
Thank you. Well, and just to speak to the public interest, I mean, there's been a few, I guess, waves, we'll call them, of mainstream public interest. You know, another one was in the 90s when it was, I think it was when Ethical Slut came out, 97, I believe. And it's beautiful to see these moments. My hope is we're in a time right now where social media just changes everything, like access to information, the ability to have conversations in such a wider, engaging way. So I'm very excited to ideally see this wave really be the start of something bigger and really make this conversation something that becomes the norm, so that we're not raised with this idea that there is this one size fits all relationship, that if you're not, you know, if it's not working for you, you're the problem. That's just not the case. Mm-hmm. So to go back to your original question of my personal journey. So this can go back to, I mean, I was a serial monogamist growing up. I never really had, the cooties phase when I was a kid. I went like straight into like, you're my boyfriend in like first grade or whatever it was. My first kiss was like a French kiss in his backyard being watched by his sister. So it was always into exhibitionism.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah. I bet he loves when I tell that story.
My first kiss was a French kiss too. It was a dare. I love it. And I was like, I'm not going to tell him it was my first kiss.
Like, that's so cute. Oh, yeah. And I never went through that like aversion phase. I was always interested in connection. And ironically, the paradox of that for me was I had also arrived at the idea that I was waiting for sex, which I defined back then as, genital penetrative sex. And I was only dating, men. I was very closeted until about 30. And I was waiting for marriage for some reason. I wasn't raised that way. I'm not religious. It was just this thing that I decided. I had a promise ring and everything. It was a whole thing. I would be in these relationships again with men only at this point in my life for about the same amount of time. And then we would break up and I would be single for about the same amount of time before I got right into the next one. And I finally noticed this pattern, and I did also choose to give my flower to my college boyfriend. We were each other's first. So it was very sweet. I'm very grateful that was my first experience, because unfortunately my second was non-consensual. Mm-hmm. So to have that as my original memory is very, very special. But I did notice, okay, I have this pattern. I'm in these relationships, same amount of time. I'm single for the same amount of time. What would happen if I was single for a little bit longer? Just longer. Let's see what's on the other side of that like deadline. And the answer is all of the shit. All of it is on the other side of that. So that began my just personal discovery, my personal growth, self-discovery journey. And part of that was realizing that I was very excited by my partner's other interests, previous partners, fantasies, things like that. I didn't know words like compersion at the time. But so for me, I was like, oh, I hear about this jealousy thing, but I don't understand like why people have such a problem with it. It feels really good. And so I started broaching this topic with, my partners after this point, and we settled on, we can have, threesome with another woman. Great. Sure. Never happened. Not for lack of me trying. And then I ended up getting into what became, unbeknownst to me, of course, at the time, but what became my last, monogamous relationship. My partner was a motivational speaker, so traveled a lot, and I would join him on the road when I could, but wasn't always available. And so I said to him, I would really love, if you meet someone on the road, send me a picture and just let me know how it goes. That's super exciting for me. I would love that. And so at one point I wasn't able to be with him, and he did meet someone, sent me a photo. She was super cute. I was so excited. I think if I remember correctly, they ended up staying up all night talking, which is great. I love it. Here for it. Let's keep going. And then another time he was gone, and I had a friend of mine coming into town. We had a sexual history, but we were very much just friends. And so to me, it was the perfect, safe opportunity to let's test this out. And my partner gave me what he called his green light. And my friend and I had a wonderful night. We connected. I found out his last relationship had been open, and I didn't even know that. And it was so beautiful. I could not wait to tell my partner. I felt so connected to him, so in love. It was one of the two most validating experiences in my life on this journey so far. And so I left my friend's place. I called him immediately. I was like, babe, I can't wait to tell you everything. Thank you so much. This feels so special. I'm so grateful. And just dead silence on the line. And then all he says is, I can't believe you did it. And everything just imploded. Of course, monogamous, non-monogamous, whatever relationship framework you're in, do not test your partners. That is not okay. Open communication, even if, he thought he would be okay and then realized, oh, actually, I'm not. You talk about that. You don't make the other person wrong for honoring a commitment that you had, even if it's something you realize, oh, now I actually realize I can't honor this. You just talk about what that is and you create new boundaries. But there were other issues in the relationship. But for me, it was a defining moment because I realized, okay, this is real for me. This is super in my bones real. So I need to explore this, and I need to explore it on my own so I don't have any more emotional casualties. This is my responsibility now. And that began a journey.
Beautiful journey from there.
Very much. Yeah. Lots of learning the hard way. A lot of things as well.
I think we've all had that experience. I have too, know, where you're feeling so good. You got the green light, and then jealousy. Let's talk about jealousy. Yeah. 'Cause I think it stems from that initially. Yeah. Boundaries, of course, too. Mm-hmm. But I know you've talked a lot about jealousy in some of your educational videos and stuff. So from your experience, there's different kinds of jealousy, right? Yeah. And And how do you kind of educate people when they're stepping into E&M to like deal with kind of some of those issues that could come up?
Yeah, I think it's important to note, and I have now also experienced jealousy, not just compersion, for myself as well. So they are different things. Jealousy, there is nothing inherently wrong with jealousy. Right out the gate, let's start there. It is not something to run away from or avoid or make yourself or someone else wrong for. It's information. It is giving you information. It is saying, hey, you are feeling either, you know, insecure in yourself. Maybe there's a concern about, you know, abandonment. Some old wounds are being triggered. Maybe there's a history of distrust in the relationship. There's insecure experiences in the relationship. It's shining a light on something for you and your partner, and or I should say, sometimes it is just for us to work on. So that's important to really differentiate when it is something that's like, oh, hey, this is my wounding. I'm going to bring this to therapy or whatever your support system is. And sometimes it's something you need to bring into the relationship and work on with your partner, but it's information and it's something, it's a tool for you to use. It's something to lean into, not run away from.
Yeah. Dive into the feeling and definitely really feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's great advice. Thank you. Have you ever had some other, I know that was kind of an empowering moment for you, but have you had any other empowering moments moving through the E&M world that you're willing to share?
Like I said, it was one of two of the big ones for sure. The other pivotal moment was actually my first play party.
Okay.
And it was shortly after this relationship. I was like, all right, I'm going to be single. I'm going to, you know, get on the apps and do that thing. And like, here we go, universe. Like, I don't know, but I know there's these communities out there. So like, hook me up. And it was maybe my like second or third date or something. I was trying all the new things. I had literally never had just like a one night, one afternoon stand in this case. And I was having a one afternoon stand. We were cleaning up. And he was like, you know, there's this community you might be interested in. They throw these parties. And that was his whole purpose in my life. Like, we've never seen each other. It was a beautiful day. I got my invite to my first play party, showed up solo, didn't realize that that was like crazy amazing to a lot of people. But, you know, I think I got also very lucky. The two people that were hosting were so generous. They were so excited when they found out it was my first party. So they like kept me under their wing, introduced me to everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just very warm and lovely. And I remember the specific moment later in the evening. It was at this really lovely like penthouse hotel room situation. And I had like looked up later in the evening. I was like, oh, wow, it really cleared out. I'm surprised. Like, it's early. Like, I would have thought people would hang out later and didn't see as much as I thought was going to be going on. And they're like, oh no, honey, come with us. Like, we go around down this hallway I didn't even notice before into what I can only refer to as the orgy room. And it was just bodies undulating. And it was honestly like it looked like a painting. It was one of the most beautiful things I had ever seen. It felt so validating. It felt like you're home. This is okay. This is safe. You are accepted. There is something here for you. And it was just the most, truly one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen. And I remember that night, I hadn't really like planned to engage or play. I just wanted to like meet people and see what the vibe was. And one of the hosts, she came up to me and she was just like, do you mind? You just have the most beautiful breasts. Can I just kiss your breasts? Like, yes. It was just lovely. And again, I had been so closeted most of my life. That also began the journey of really me opening up to my full sexuality and expression and dropping into that sensual empowerment that I really guide my clients on.
Yeah. The sensual empowerment is huge. That's kind of what I tap into mostly too, is guiding people to be, to tap into the senses and just remind yourself that there's so much more than just like fucking, like it's about having that goddess energy and really tapping into that sensual power.
Yeah, I think we conflate a lot of things in our society, you know, love and sex and marriage, and we put them all together and they all mean one thing, and they're not the same thing. They don't all necessarily go together. You can have wonderful, beautiful sex with somebody who isn't your spouse. You can love someone deeply who is not your partner. Who, you know, there are so many different mixtures and ways to experience all the wonderful things that life and senses have to offer us. Creating a safe framework for yourself enables you to really explore all of that in an empowered way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well said. Beautiful. And you kind of found your sexuality, you said, going to parties. So what was that like? Obviously empowering.
Yes, definitely. It was just to be in a space, and I'll be fully transparent. There are a lot of communities. We're in Los Angeles. There's a lot of more organized or more just, friends getting together all the way through to like theatrical, experiences that you buy tickets to, stuff like that. And what I found throughout my journey, this all started for me in 2016. When I'm interested in something, I dive in. I'm like, how can I be involved? I started hosting for some of the communities that I had connected with. And I loved that. I had a partner actually for a couple of years. It was my first non-monogamous partnership in this space. And we hosted a number of play parties. And I love hosting in general. What I did find, unfortunately, at least earlier in my journey, was a striking lack of integrity in a lot of the communities. And for me, that's a pretty non-negotiable situation. If you say this is how we run things, and then you go, well, except for the founder, well, except for the founder's friends, well, except here, and we don't do that, doesn't roll. The point of having frameworks and having boundaries is so that you have a system that can be honored. And if you want to push those boundaries together with your partner or your friends or your community, you discuss it, you make agreements, but you don't just make exceptions willy-nilly here and there. So all that to say, yes, it was a huge part in my journey. And even realizing that sort of inconsistency in certain spaces really allowed me to get firmer in who I am and what I stand for and what I'm willing and not willing to engage in. So about, let's do math, maybe 3 to 4 years into my journey, I ended up meeting the founders of a community known as The Play. And that, I didn't know at the time, that became my home. We're setting a precedent for safety and health within the community as the first play party to require STI testing from all of our guests. We have a really yummy, juicy vetting process that involves a thorough application, one-on-one interviews. And it's really just, we call it like a vibe check to see like what people are about. Do you get what we're doing? Would you fit into our community? Are you going to get along with everybody here? It's not like a hot or not interview process. It's just like, who are you and where are you at? And I've just, when I find my people, this is my family.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I agree. There were some moments, and I was in the lifestyle and the swinger community, and then I really took a long break and have recently kind of dipped back into it. I mean, I wouldn't consider my partner and I as swingers by any means, but we do like to play. Mm-hmm. We do like to have a good time and explore and enjoy ourselves. But yeah, I feel like I did find some things about certain communities where I was like, you know what? Yeah. Like maybe this part isn't for me, or like you said, like the hot or not, I find that it's very, I had a listener actually ask me this recently, and they were like, me and my partner are very curvy people, and we feel sometimes judged in the space. Mm-hmm. And I just told them, those aren't your people. Mm-hmm. If that's giving you that vibe, then those aren't your people. But there is kind of still this stigma about a lot of parties where it's like, show us a picture, we're going off your looks. And it's cool to hear that a place like The Play or other, communities are growing and evolving and really going off that vibe.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important to note that it's how to say it. Like, if it's only looks, that's problematic.
Right.
We're a complete entity. And it's also the understanding that maybe if I don't find someone attractive, that doesn't mean that they are not attractive. It means they are not my attraction.
Yeah, not so your cup of tea.
I am not our entire community. That's why I love that we're actually a leadership board. It's not like one person or one couple. It is a small group of us all with very diverse backgrounds, tastes, experiences, et cetera, who make decisions as a group. So it's not like everyone at our parties looks the same. There's, it's Baskin Robbins. There's 31 flavors. And it's really about creating, like, the responsibility that we feel is to create a really safe, creative container for people to really feel empowered to explore and express freely, ideally maybe in ways they never even have before. Like, we want to be that first for them. What's really special about what we do too is we're a pretty theatrical event. We exist, we like to say, at the intersection of art and sex. So inherently we're a community of artists. So we have performances at all of our events. And our performers always come from within our community. And granted, we have performers that are, you know, world-class touring professionals, but we also have performances from people who are amateurs and maybe they have a fantasy they've always wanted to, you know, fulfill. And we pair them with our erotic producers to turn that fantasy into either a performance or some sort of experiential part of the evening. So it's really, again, it's very communal. It's very creative. It's very expressive.
Yeah, I've been to a few parties and maybe one was the play and this was years and years ago, but I loved the initial, like dance that was so sexy and the performance because it really does get you in the mood and it makes you feel like just turned on and like ready to kind of relax and let go and have fun.
And I also want to draw attention to, like you noted about you and your partner, your agreements, your relationship framework. It's really important to note that you don't have to be non-monogamous to go to play parties, and you don't have to go to play parties if you're non-monogamous. We certainly, like with these don't have to go together. We have plenty of monogamous couples who come. They want to, you know, meet people, be in that environment. It gets them excited. And maybe they, you know, if they play, they only play with each other, or they don't play in that venue. They take it all back home. There is no expectation. You know, it's very much, we really encourage everyone who comes to our parties, especially if they're in a couple, throuple, any relationship dynamic, to really discuss their boundaries. We call them their dibs or bids, your desires, your intentions, and your boundaries for the evening, and keep discussing them throughout the evening. And we even call it out in our welcome speech of like, have you talked about that yet? Let's practice with each other. We do an intimacy exercise. So everyone really drops in and like practices sharing their boundaries with each other.
Yeah. Do you do something similar? Because you have started your own business too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you want to talk a little bit about
that? Yeah, I would love to. It's very much kind of what we were talking about earlier. You were asking me about the beginning of my journey and my intention with launching Passport to Pleasure, which is my company I just launched, is to basically, I wish I existed when I started.
Yeah.
I want to bring all of my resources over the, you know, since 2016, what is this now? Over 8 years, eight, 9 years. All of my resources, everything I've learned, all into one place through educational offerings like online courses, private guidance with me as well. I'll be launching experiential retreats in the future as well. And just again, bringing everything into one place so people can figure out, you know, am I ready to explore this space? You know, why do I want to explore this space? I have a couple like free tools that I offer people who are getting started. One is called What the Fuck Do You Want? Discover Your Big Why. And it's just a short little worksheet. It really helps people, again, use their senses, dropping into their body awareness, asking important questions, really exploring what is their big why for why they even want to step into non-monogamy and explore this space. Because once you have that, that is going to inform every decision you make on this journey. And then the other tool I love to offer people that are already people that are already partnered is called the relationship ratio. And just because you want to start exploring doesn't mean your relationship is necessarily ready to open up. So the relationship ratio simplifies, is again, a very short worksheet that you can do with your partner. And the number you get will help you understand where you're at and whether or not your relationship is in a strong enough foundation to start exploring opening up. And then if you are, I have my foundational online course, which is called ENM 101, Exploring Healthy Non-Monogamy. And that gives you just all the basics, the vocabulary, the relationship frameworks, how to talk, you know, what is consent, how to talk about boundaries, what are your boundaries? And then you discover through understanding what I call your hierarchy of needs, your emotional and romantic and your physical and sexual needs on like a two-plane chart. And that will help you determine which relationship structure is best for you. You'll arrive at what I call your IRS, your ideal relationship structure. That will then inform your big, big takeaway, which is the end of the course. You will get walked step by step by me through creating your relationship agreement. And that is an actual literal document that you build with your partner about what is this going to look like? You know, what are our boundaries? How do we communicate with new partners or about new partners? What are our safer sex practices? What does co-parenting look like, et cetera, et cetera. Like everything on paper. Honestly, even if you're monogamous, you should have a relationship agreement. We assume like a marriage document is, you know, enough, but we make a lot of assumptions that get us in trouble. Having all of it down on paper and again, reviewing it regularly, because it is a living, breathing document, just like your relationship, really sets you up to have a foundation from which to really explore everything that alternative relationship dynamics offer.
Yeah, I think it's also the root is kind of communication, right? Very like much. Just continuously having those conversations and really mm-hmm. like diving deep into who you are and learning about yourself and your yeah. partner and yeah, checking in every few years and making sure you're still on the same page.
Oh, I would say much more often than every few years. I mean, honestly, when you're just starting out, I would encourage monthly. And then as you're getting more comfortable, maybe quarterly. But it's something you really are looking at over and over. And, you know, I'm at a point in my journey, you know, discussing boundaries, for example. It's taken a great deal of cultivation. This is not the way a beginner should do it. But I'm at a point where I discover my boundaries now by smashing into them head on and going, oh, I did not like that. Good to know. I will not be doing that again.
Lesson learned.
Yes, exactly. Well, and that actually brings me to an important point. You know, whether it's sexual, emotional, whatever it is, creating, understanding these boundaries that you have, that your relationship has, your boundaries are the edges of your comfort zone. Ideally, they're not immovable. The boundary area is for you to understand where you can push safely, because being uncomfortable is how we grow. Being unsafe is a different conversation. And I think our society seems to have kind of conflated the two, unsafe and uncomfortable, to be the same, and they are not. The ideal relationship is a safe container in which you can push those edges just a little bit so that you're each growing both as individuals and within the relationship. So again, making sure that that relationship is a safe container to make mistakes, because they will happen. They will absolutely happen. Again, no matter what relationship dynamic you're in, monogamous, non-monogamous, mistakes happen. We are humans. So making sure that we are a safe relationship space for us to make mistakes, that we feel comfortable and confident bringing those mistakes, you know, out into the open with our partner, and that our partner feels encouraged to bring them forward as well so that we can learn from them. Now, if the same mistake keeps happening over and over and over after it's already been addressed, a boundary's been erected, something like that, now we're looking at a behavioral issue that's a pattern. And that really is a time to bring in some outside support, whether from, you know, professional, helping professional, or, you know, your community, but making sure, of course, your community includes people who understand non-monogamy. I think that's kind of on a tangent right now, but I like to make this point. Get me warmed up. Here we go. The support system is really key. A lot of people who are stepping into this space are the first people in their community to do so. And they will experience friction, because stepping into something new is going to create challenges, is going to bring to light things that maybe were easier to kind of slip under the monogamy rug. And there, again, there are opportunities for you to grow. Do not run away from them. Lean in. And a lot of well-meaning, you know, friends and family will say, hey, you know, these issues weren't here before you opened up. Maybe you shouldn't be opening up.
Right.
And that 9 times out of 10 is not the case. So making sure, you know, look at your sources of wisdom. Who are you going to advice and support for with this new exploration? Is it somebody who actually has successful experience with that? And if not, get someone who does.
Yeah, that's all great advice. I think a lot of people need to hear that, because relationships are roller coasters, and it's good to know that, you know, people make mistakes, but you also have to support yourself and have that community. I think that's so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
What else would you kind of tell people or the misconceptions that we hear a lot about in the kind of non-monogamy space that we can like stomp on?
So many. Well, we touched on one earlier that, you know, is the common one of just like, oh, you know, you guys just are trying to, you know, cheat and say you're not cheating. Well, cheating is actually about lies and dishonesty and deceit. It's not about having sex with somebody else or having an emotional relationship with somebody else, or it's how you treat that. The whole point of, you know, non-monogamy, as you said, is also called consensual non-monogamy. It's that everyone is aware of and, you know, in agreement on how this is going. It doesn't mean mistakes don't happen. You can absolutely still cheat and be cheated on in a non-monogamous structure, because again, it's about lying. It's about deceit. You can do that in any relationship dynamic. But in healthy non-monogamy, it's offering the opportunity to be honest about our humanity. It is so normal and healthy to be attracted to people who are not your partner, emotionally and physically. It's so normal. It's okay. It's a very unrealistic expectation to think that all of your myriad complex needs will be satisfied by one person. Mm-hmm. We don't have one friend, most of us. Mm-hmm. We don't, you know, have one person that we do business things with. Like we have multiple relationships in all quadrants of our life. Why would this not be the same case? And that doesn't mean that, again, monogamy is bad and non-monogamy is good. It's about understanding that there are options. Totally. That there isn't a one size fits all. So like, what are your needs? First of all, most people don't even know. Mm-hmm. So what are your needs? Establish what those are, and then understand what relationship dynamics can help you satisfy those things. So just to look at some other myths, like you originally asked, I think another big one is that, you know, people who are interested in non-monogamy are emotionally avoidant. You mm-hmm. know, it's like, it's how we avoid. Oh, I mean, sure. There are certainly people who use it that way, but that is not the norm. Any intimacy, vulnerability that you're going to experience in one relationship, you're going to experience in all of your relationships. You are investing in all of those dynamics. And so you are learning about different parts of yourself. Something I thought was really interesting on my journey is look at me doing all my personal work. I understand that I have an anxious attachment style because of the way I was raised, and look at me diagnosing all these things, and I've worked on it, and I'm secure now. Excuse me. And here I am in a secondary relationship acting avoidant. I'm like, what is happening? I'm not avoidant. I'm anxious when I'm triggered. And it's just understanding that all these different people and relationship dynamics and different structures that you build are going to bring out different elements of you. So you're always going to be cultivating that self-growth, personal development in ways that you'd never even experienced. So if you are avoidant, get ready to work on it.
Yeah, I agree. Like being in open relationships of any form, I find that you're constantly just learning new things about yourself.
Yeah.
Like you said before, it's like you're constantly talking about those needs, desires, boundaries, and just, yeah. So I think that's a great myth that needs to go away.
And learning about your partner too. If you are partnered,
right,
you get to experience your partner in new ways that you just fundamentally wouldn't if it was only you guys.
Totally.
And sometimes that's great. And sometimes it's uncomfortable, but it's always valuable.
Yeah, totally. If someone came to you and was interested in, you know, pursuing a non-monogamous relationship, do you have any advice for them or places to start? Maybe you're,
I have a few free tools you might want to look at.
Free worksheets.
Yeah. Like I said, I think it's foundational. It's important that you understand your big why, as I call it. Why are you interested? Mm-hmm. Why do you want to open up? If you're single, what is that about? If you're partnered in a relationship, why do you want to open that relationship? Do both of you want to open it? Does one of you want to open it only because the other one wants to open it? Having these conversations is really important. So once you have your big why, if you are partnered, figuring out what your relationship ratio is. And like I said, it's a simple worksheet. It basically helps you open up the concept of reciprocity in a relationship into a way that's integrating the understanding that if you're in a couple, you're actually already in a threesome. There's you, your partner, and your relationship. And each of those entities deserves just as much attention and effort as the other. So it helps you really dial in where your energy and effort is going, how you're receiving, where it's coming from, and if you're ready to open that up from an abundant place. Non-monogamy, opening up your relationship, is additive. It's not reparative. Big, big, big difference.
Yeah, that is a big point. And I love that. I've never heard that, you know, talking about the threesome, you know, focusing on yourself and obviously your partner and the relationship as a whole is completely different.
Yeah.
I hate when people are like, he completes me. I'm like, no, like, great. You complete yourself.
Yeah. Well, and your whole life, it's a tapestry. When are you complete? Like I am constantly learning. Mm-hmm. I do my very, very best to come from a place of curiosity as much as I can in my life. And that means that goes all the way through to like, I learn from my clients too. That's why I call myself a guide versus like a coach, like no disrespect. It's just to me, coach, you know, is just as trained and practiced, you know, in the game, but they're on the sidelines. A guide is actually out there with you on the trail, doing the work, traveling, learning, expanding at the same time. So yes, I have, you know, 8-9 years experience. I've been studying nonstop. I actually went back to school initially because I was like, maybe, you know, let me get a master's in clinical psychology and really pursue it that way. And unfortunately, what I found was there was just no information on alternative relationship dynamics in the course. So I was going to have to do all of this self-study and immersion on my own anyway. So I was like, let me save the $100,000 and like 100%. Just do that. And so again, that's why I call myself a guide is like, yes, I'm trained. Yes, I'm experienced. I'm also literally out there living it, doing it just like you. And to me, that's a very important distinction.
Yeah, I love that. And I love your idea or your future plans to have these, you know, your brand is called Passport to Pleasure, but these super kind of maybe international or not, mm-hmm. but just like these travel excursions where people can really explore if they'd like, or just be in that safe container. I think that's amazing. I've always wanted to, I mean, obviously money, we don't all have all the money in the world and those are kind of expensive trips, but there's some really cool opportunities that are coming out of this, this umbrella world where you can like find a party or find an excursion and be away from your kind of judgments of home and family.
Yeah. I think the reason it's called Passport to Pleasure is because what I've noticed, I'm a big travel bum. This is a defining moment for me. If you understand this moment from my childhood, you understand me fundamentally as a person. I remember the exact moment when I realized that I would not be able to go everywhere, see everything, and meet everyone. And my heart literally broke. Like, I'm just, but why? Like, what is this all for? So part of my life mission is to do as much of that as possible. So connection is key. Curiosity is key. And what I've noticed is a lot of people are very adventurous when it comes to literal travel, like getting out there in the world. They're curious. They're open to things being unexpected. But when the journey is inward, there's a lot of retraction and fear. So my mission is to bring that same excitement and adventure that we attribute to external travel to the inward journey as well. So that you're having that same openness for expansion, and then you can take it out into the world. When you realize, oh, hey, maybe I want to explore non-monogamy, I don't advise just immediately going to a play party and jumping right in. You got to jump in here first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, baby steps.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah, I love that. That's so beautiful. I love the name. That makes a lot of sense.
Thank you.
You got to explore within and then explore outward.
And it can be fun. Yeah. It really can be.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite memories in the E&M space or if you have any you're willing to share?
Yeah, I think I was experiencing compersion long before I understood what that was. And then realizing, so I should specify for those who don't know what compersion is, it's known colloquially as the opposite of jealousy. It's when we experience pleasure from seeing our partner experience pleasure with someone else. So I initially assumed that was my romantic partners. I have come to learn that I experience compersion deeply for my friends, people that I care about. Mm-hmm. So the fact that I throw play parties with a lot of people that I care about, oof. It's fun. Yeah. I get to just see my friends having an amazing time. I don't even need to play. Yeah, I'm in so much pleasure all the time, just seeing the joy and excitement and pleasure that the people that I care most about are experiencing. That's just as good. I mean, don't get me wrong. I play when I want to play too, but it's, when that really dropped in, it was like in the moment where I realized I was having a lovely time with someone and one of my dearest friends was having a lovely time right next to me. And we were just like, we both get a lot of compersion for each other. So we were just shooting it back and forth and with our partner. And it's just this just like definition lived experience of abundant. That's what I felt like.
Yeah. That's the best when you're like just at a party or in a space with your partner and you're just all in. Yeah. The pleasure space. And so it's hard not to just grin from ear to ear. I'm always just smiling.
Exactly. And I was like, I can't not. I think that's the thing a lot of people don't realize is first of all, non-monogamy is not a free-for-all. It's actually all about the boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. But the boundaries are what give you the freedom. People seem to think, or they come to me often with the opposite thing. Oh, if I have, you know, this means I have to be like totally cool with like whatever. Mm-hmm. No, it means you need to understand very specifically what you're cool with right now. what you're willing to try and what you're very much not cool with. Because then we can start growing and trying new things in a safe way. So we're not like shooting your, you know, nervous system through the roof. You need to be regulated, feel safe and secure in order to grow so that you're not in a trauma response every time we're trying something new. It's those boundaries that give you the freedom.
Yeah, that's so true. And I've been writing this memoir for years and those are my themes. You know, originally I was like, oh, this is about boundaries and, you know, relationships and sex and get people crossing those boundaries or me crossing people's boundaries. And I was like, this is all about boundaries. Then when I finished it or my first draft, I was like, you know what, actually, this is all about freedom. And I've used that in my relationship too. It's like, you realize that, you know, boundaries are so crucial, but like you said, yeah, it really does give you that freeing feeling. When you understand those about yourself.
Yeah, very much.
Well, I thank you so much, like, for all your wisdom.
Oh, thank you very much.
I would love to know the last time you had that sweet release or a sweet release story you're willing to share.
I will. And I'm so glad we saved this to the end. I gave you a little teaser that there was a memory I wanted to share with you.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't be surprised if you don't remember it and you definitely don't know the context. But we're going to do it live. I am so nervous right now. Like immediately 12 right now. So like I mentioned, I was very closeted for most of my life. And my like survival technique was just like be best friends with the girls that I was attracted to. And so I would just constantly friend zone myself whenever I was attracted to somebody. So when I began this journey a few years in, you know, I had a partner at this time. A man, and he really was wanting to encourage me to express and figure out what that is, and like, let's get curious, and I'm here to support you, whatever experiences you need. So we were at a play party, and that you were also at.
Okay.
And our delicious and generous hosts and some of their friends learned that I had never eaten someone before. And that I had a little baby crush on someone at the party. And so there was like this corralling of people. I was like in a conversation with someone else. And then all of a sudden, like five or six of our friends came up to me and was like, you're coming with us. And they like brought me into a room. And there were a number of us. And they asked if you would be open to it. And you were my first.
Oh my God, amazing.
I'm blushing.
I wish I remembered. It
was a big deal for me. It was probably just another day for you. No, that did not come out right, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Oh my God, I love it.
It was very sweet. It was like just the whole way it happened that it was such like a communal, like friends coming together of like, oh my goodness, we are helping you do this. And like it was just, and you were lovely. And this was like years ago at this point.
It must have been a long time ago. Yeah. But that's amazing. Yeah.
Very lucky.
I hope I tasted delicious and all the things.
You were gorgeous.
Oh my God. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for letting me.
Yeah, those moments are the best when you can experience like a first and everyone's like corralling you and like the excitement and the energy. Totally. And it's like just a cheering crowd. Yeah. It's like so fun.
It gives you that like confidence. It's like I learned early on and I still love bringing people to their first party, but that's also kind of, you know, selfishly in a way why I started Passport to Pleasure is I really love welcoming people into this space. Mm-hmm. It's been such a transformative journey and such an enriching space for me to be in and to grow in that I want that for everyone. I truly believe that if our world leaders were better fucked, we'd be less fucked. And I mean that in authentic relationships and connection and being able to really be fully self-expressed. So if we can do that with each other, anything's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful. We'll end it on that. Thanks again, Allie. I appreciate you. And just a reminder to you, my sweets, just be sweet to yourself, be sweet to those conversations and talking about those boundaries and just be sweet out there. Thanks, guys. See you next time. Thanks, Allie.
Thank you.